recording.
Little box is blinking red.
You blinking red, Dave? All right. This is Scott Kurtz. My keyword, Lipton green tea. Lipton green tea.
Wait a minute. Are you seriously drinking Lipton green tea? Because I am right now. That's amazing. Are you really drinking Lipton green tea?
I'm holding the bottle of it right now, Dave. I'm not kidding you.
Do you have the one with citrus?
With citrus and natural flavors.
That's actually oddly freaky.
Antioxidants. And then we cut to Brad at his house, and he's holding a bottle of Colt 45 in one hand. And a box of Gallo wine in the other.
And in the background, you just see a forklift dropping off a huge crate of Glenfiddich. And it's just like, Brad, Lord, man.
Beep, beep, beep.
Oh, my God. That All I'm right. sorry, but that did oddly freak me out when you said Lipton green tea, because I literally had my hand out to grab it right then. That kind of freaked me out.
Yeah? You thought I was watching you.
All right. So that's your keyword. Brad, what's your keyword?
My keyword is hop devil. Hop devil.
What?
What's a hop devil?
That's a Victory Brewing Company beer that I'm drinking tonight. It's up on the hops. It's really good. It kind of like an English bitters.
Oh. A bit of an English pale or more of an Indian pale ale.
You know how if you go to an English pub, you can get bitters?
I do indeed. I used to work in a pub in London for a while. I do indeed know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it tastes a lot like that.
Very nice.
And it's brewed right here in Downington, Pennsylvania.
Very nice.
That's our next. Maybe we need to get a sponsor after we get Southwest Airlines out of the way. We can get them for a sponsor.
You know, Brett. I had a visit with a Philadelphia cartoonist this week. A friend of yours from your neck of the woods was in town, and he was encouraging me and Angie to come visit your beautiful city.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Who'd you see?
Jamar Nicholas.
Oh, yeah, Jamar. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he was saying that three of us should do a signing somewhere in Pittsburgh and call it the Monsters of Webcomics.
I'd do it in a minute.
Yeah, but it's not happening. Anyway, Webcomics Weekly.
Very nice.
We didn't do Dave yet. He needs a word so he can link
up. Oh, all right. Dave Kellett, Faber-Castell. Faber-Castell.
Oh, for crying out loud.
That's all I got.
I thought David's keyword was Scott. Are you really drinking green tea? Seriously?
Yeah, that. Mine was a 2-minute diatribe, exactly. All right, so let's get going. So we were chatting with Brad before the podcast, and Brad was enthusiastic about our topic from last week, talking about San Diego. And so we thought we would give him the floor to any points that he wanted to make about the show. Do I have that right, Brad?
My God, you guys were killing me because I was listening to you in the newsroom while I was working, and I had my headphones on, and I kept like taking these breaths like I was going to jump in, and I had to catch myself from actually speaking out loud into the newsroom because all these things you were talking about was really, really going to the heart of some of the things that I deal with when I go to conventions and in general. And it killed me that you guys had such a great conversation without me. So please, next time that I'm gone, can you guys talk about copyright law or something? So this doesn't happen. But you guys missed one thing that is my biggest pet peeve and the reason that I really, really don't like to give critiques at a comic convention. And that is the people who are asking for the critique really don't want to do anything with the information that you give them.
We covered that. We covered that, Brad. Next.
Well, no, you didn't. You really didn't. Because I'm telling you, I've been in situations, and every now and again I float past the Half Pixel forum and I see somebody saying something like, I've started a second comic. And I look in and the guy's doing a 3-day-a-week comic. He started a 2-day-a-week comic. And this is a good guy, by the way. So I'm not beating up on him too bad. I know this guy through email conversation, and he's a really good guy and an excellent cartoonist. But I said, you're really wasting your time doing a three-day-a-week cartoon and a two-day-a-week cartoon. You should be doing a five-day-a-week cartoon, one title, and really, really get good at that. And his answer was, yeah, but that's what I want to do. And that's what you get when you give somebody a critique. Yeah, but this, yeah, but that. There's always these yeah, buts you got to deal with. They don't want to actually hear any critique. They're going to go on and do what they're going to do anyway. And maybe, by the way, maybe they should do what they were going to do anyway. But they don't want to hear a critique. They want to hear an attaboy, you're doing great, nobody's better than you. And as soon as you veer into critique area, you get yeah, but. And that's why I don't give critiques, because I hate hearing yeah, but.
Yeah, but Brad, you know what you do when you get that?
What?
You look at him, you look at him and you go, yeah, but!
Oh, my God.
Huh? That, and I'm done for the week. All right, guys, I'm signing off, and I'll see you next week.
Please let that be the end of the show. Did I fall asleep and just wake up at the end of the show? Please say that.
No, actually, Scott, even worse, you fell asleep and woke up in 1938. That's what you did.
But no, that is really, and I will argue that maybe it's best that people find their own way, and maybe it's not, maybe it isn't good that they always listen to somebody saying what they should be doing. Maybe they've got to find their own way. Maybe that's the only way people can learn. But don't waste my time with a critique and then give me yeah, but. I just, I'm telling you, I can't stand it.
Hey,
change the subject because I'll go on for another 10 minutes.
Well, I was just thinking about one of my favorite old-time movies. Yeah, but, and I Told You versus Dracula.
Don't start with me on that either. We're driving to Ohio. While you guys are taping this podcast, most likely, we're driving to Ohio to visit my in-laws. My 6-year-old son is in the back seat. He wants to see a Dracula movie. I keep telling him he can't watch a Dracula movie. Then it hits me. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It's got the three big Universal Studios monsters in it, right?
True.
So I call into the in-laws and say, hey, for movie night tonight, pick up Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It's got Dracula in it. What do they come back with? Young Frankenstein. For my 6-year-old, for the 6, and you know what? He loves it, and he agrees with me. Terry Garr.
Yeah, who could argue with that?
You know what? Though,
who could argue with that? But you let your son watch it. You let your son watch Young Frankenstein.
I swear to God, I'm ashamed to admit I did. Although I was sitting next to him the whole time, and a couple of times my hands just happened to slide down and cover up his eyes.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know what?
For the most part.
Forgive me for this, but yeah. I forget. Like I loved Young Frankenstein. What was bad about it? I honestly don't remember.
There,
was there a new
there
scene?
Were a
nah,
couple parts.
There's some sexual innuendo towards the end, I guess. Most of it is very. I think it would go right over a kid's head, like when Terry Garr says, "Would you like to take a roll in the hay?" And then she goes, "Roll, roll, roll in the hay." I just don't see how that anyway.
Oh my God, though. But I could see how putting on the Ritz for a 6-year-old would just be fantastic, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of it he did like. The part in the very beginning where he's wrestling the Book of Frankenstein from a dead corpse, that I covered his eyes up because it was just a little bit
scary.
Gross.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. And just a couple parts where, you know, that happened to have Terry Garr in him, and by hand just happened to slip over his eyes. Other than that, and by the end where the big heavy sexual innuendo was, he was already off to something else by that. The big climax for him was was with the monster, and all that other denouement stuff kind of left him cold.
Yeah. Well, man, I got to tell you, it's pretty exciting to show Young Frankenstein to a person for the first time ever. That's a classic.
It really was.
That is a classic. That is a great flick. That is a great flick.
So it's one of the now that I've completely ever. Derailed
not,
this
not,
conversation.
No, Brad, it's not unlike the crisp, cool taste of Lipton green tea with citrus. delicious.
Delicious like a webcomic.
Getting back on topic. Well, so, Brad, so that was your only curmudgeonly point from last week?
Yeah, that was my big... That was my big one, is that when people ask for critiques, they're not really prepared to do the hard things that they need to do to improve their work.
Yeah. Well, you know what, on that one, and then we can move on because I think we covered it last week to death, but I think actually Jeff Smith told Scott the best bit of advice that I had ever heard when Scott years ago asked Jeff, and we had talked about this in an earlier podcast, Scott, so forgive me if I have it misquoted, but Jeff said, I'm not going to tell you what it takes to make a career happen, because unless you have the wherewithal and the drive and the enthusiasm to go find out what it takes anyway, you're not going to make it. Wasn't it essentially that phrasing?
Yeah, essentially he said, I think I happen to be like the last straw for him. So, you know, he basically said what you guys are saying, which is every time someone asks him that and he tells them the answer, they roll their eyes. And they didn't get the answer they wanted. They don't like it. And so I think I was the first person he decided to tell, if you don't know what to do, you don't got what it takes. So, you know, and, you know, I left that signing thinking to myself that he was full of it and I wasn't going to listen to him. But I mean, after my feelings were done being hurt and I thought about it, I thought, yeah, he's right. And then I started, you know, changing my attitude about it. So, yeah, maybe you guys are right. Maybe we should just start being really rough on...
Well, no, that wasn't my point. My point was that we've got to instill in people the drive to, like, it's a self-driven life, and you've got to start, if you're not doing it yet, you've got to start cultivating an ability. It's like, you know how they always say school is not so much teaching you facts, but learning how to look up facts or that sort of thing, you know, Western schools anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a lot of parallel to what your card. This is what?
Dave?
Yeah, did I lose Brad? What happened?
Brad?
No, I'm listening with rapt attention.
Oh,
oh. no, well, you know how like schools on certain Eastern European schools, they teach by rote memorization, but Western schools teach by, like, we're going to teach you how to use resources. And I think a good cartooning career is learning on a self-guided career, and that's what I was trying to get at last week, was that part of what Jeff Smith was saying to Scott is, look, if you don't have the desire and the wherewithal and the ability to find out what you need on your own, then you're not going to make it anyway, because there's so little handholding in this industry and career that you've got to develop an ability to be self-sustaining, you know?
Well, you guys know who Mark Waid is? Comic book writer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's a very famous comic book writer. He writes for Marvel and DC, and he said one time that when people break into comics, the first thing they do is cover their tracks, essentially. I thought it was a clever way of basically saying that the way in is different for everybody. So it's almost a futile effort to give anyone advice on how to break in anyhow, because once you've broken in, then that's the only way that it works for Brad Geiger. And that's not going to work for Scott Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. Scott's got to find his own path in. So,
yeah.
And besides, Chris is handling all the critiques in San Diego, right?
That's true.
That is right, Brad. Thank you for bringing that up, Brad. So Chris,
that is a good point.
And that is Chris spelled Rob Chris. That is spelled Chris Straub, K-R-I-S S-T-R-A-U-B at the Image Comics booth. He'll be handling critiques all weekend long, so please come by.
Unless Chris objects, Chris? No?
All right. Chris?
Well, Chris will be doing critiques in San Diego.
that's good butter. very nice. All right, Brad. Well, thank you for adding your curmudgeonliness to my earlier
thank
curmudgeonliness.
You. And,
I appreciate
and I think
that.
My curmudgeonliness now has completely offset any curmudgeonliness that you guys put forward last week. I think I may have heightened the curve a little bit for you.
Boy, we did pick the one week that was Brad's week to shine, and it was the week
he was gone. Oh, my God. I was sitting there just champing at the bit to jump into. Every time there was a pause, I was like, and another thing, and another thing. It was horrible.
Is it champing at the bit or chomping at the bit?
Officially, it is champing at the bit is the correct usage.
What?
Well, the bit in this case would be a bit in a horse's mouth, right? I always thought it was chomping at the bit.
I did, too.
It is champing at the bit.
Brad, are you saying champing, or is that just how you pronounce chomp?
No, champing with an A.
Sorry, that caught me off guard. I had a mouthful of citrus green tea, too. Boy.
Oh, my gosh. Brad is correct. To bite or chew upon noisily. Champing at the bit. To work the jaws and teeth vigorously. To show impatience at being held back or delayed. Champ at the bit. Wow.
Chomping at the bit is actually incorrect usage.
Wow.
That is awful. Because I
know
the next time I use it correctly, people are going to think I'm an idiot.
I know. That's the curse. I've just cursed you because somebody did that to me. I said chomping at the bit. And they said, no. Because you got to realize I hang out with a lot of people with whom the English language is really, you know, a thing. You know, you hang around copy editors long enough, you find this stuff out. And it's like, no. Champing at the bit. That's the and so having known that, now you can't purposefully do it wrong.
Right.
So you do it right, and as soon as you do it right, everybody tells you that you're wrong.
Man, I am champing at the bit to use this. This is fantastic.
I really honestly thought it was one of those situations where Brad's like, oh yeah. Yeah, so he's champing at the bit. Don't you know?
Oh sure, Mom. Don't you know we're champing at the bit. Oh, it's gonna be a great fall. The apples are really coming out on this year. Oh, this is gonna be a delicious apple pie season. Oh, I'm champing at the bit to try a delicious
apple.
Champing
at the bit.
That would be the name of the pub that Brad would open up back home in Michigan. Welcome to Champing at the Bit. All right, so. So shall we get started, gents, after 48 minutes of talking about whatever it was we were just talking about?
I say we wrap this up right now. Call tonight.
All right. You've been listening to Web Comics Weekly.
We can get an early start in the morning. No, seriously.
Yeah, we got to go to the mailbag.
All right. Going to the mailbag. This one is from Rob Chambers at robchambers.com. And he says, hi, guys. Long time, first time, yada, yada. Thanks for the – I'm going to skip this part. Okay. What adaptations, if any, have you guys made for readers that might be looking you up on a BlackBerry, iPhone, Sidekick, etc.? Also, what adaptations have you made, if any, for readers that are disabled, vision impaired, or low vision? Which I think, man, those are two very different questions. So let's tackle the first one. I hadn't read the second one. Let's tackle the first one first. So what adaptations, if any, have we individually made for readers looking you up on a BlackBerry, iPhone, this, that, the other? What have you got so far?
Boy, precious little. I'm going to take the easy one, and that is Ono Robot, using Ono Robot, which I think you use, Dave, and I don't know whether you use, Scott. But people can type in transcripts of my comics, and you can read my comic that way. And thanks to the fact that I've got really great fans, especially a good friend of mine named Paul that I met out in D.C., they type in this stuff with amazing detail. They'll tell you who's standing where, what the look on their face was, stuff like that. So you could actually go through my Ono Robot transcript, and really, if that's the only way that comic was accessible to you, you could really get a feel for what was going on.
Oh, you're saying for adaptations for the disabled, vision impaired or low vision in that case?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought I had asked the question about the BlackBerry or the iPhone first. But yeah, we can talk about that one.
Yeah, I was going second first because I've got nothing for BlackBerry and iPhone. I don't know that what we do is particularly well suited for that medium.
Well, it's really funny because I think that the fact that I've done very little to make PvP work on mobile devices is getting to be less and less of a crime because the technology is advancing rapidly to cover my mistake. Certainly anyone that owns an iPhone knows that my strip, without any altering of the site for mobile devices, the strip looks fantastic on an iPhone. There was a time, I think two iterations previous, where I had a mobile version of PvP. It was when I first got my Trio. And it was just a second web page where the daily strip was displayed on its side. So if you visited it in a web browser, you kind of saw PvP cocked to the side. But if you had a Trio or something, it would connect and you could turn your phone to the side and scroll across. But I think it's just one of those things where it really is an awful medium at this point for looking at comic strips. But I think it's getting, actually, the technology is catching up to where it's so funny this question came up because I was talking to my dad about it today. You know, my dad was telling me that, you know, anyone in any business, and then he made a point to say, including you, Scotty, that that doesn't think forward and think ahead and worry about what's coming next is doomed to be trapped in what they're doing right now, and then their business is going to die. And so he said, you know, don't get so cocksure about being on the web, because in 5 years it may not be the web anymore. And he says, look at those iPhones you and Brian have. That might be where people are reading comics in 5 years. They don't even want to go on the web anymore. And so, you know, I think that it would be really interesting, especially now that the new iPhone's out with all these applications, where we find a way to maybe automate it so that every day our strip is available on those phones one panel at a time. You know, you hit a button to the left, see the next panel. It would be really exciting to check that out. But I'm sorry?
And we do have to remember that there's a whole section of the worldwide population in which that's how they access the World Wide Web, period, is through their phones. And that's mainly in China, and I think a lot of India.
A healthy chunk of Japan as well, yeah.
Right, that's how they're accessing it. They have no interface with the World Wide Web through a computer as we would know it. It's mainly through their phone. And that's a huge part of what's going to be our market in the years to come.
I really do think it is. I mean, I think the days of us being able to just shrug and go, nah, haven't done much for the mobile phone thing, are going away.
Right. Well, you know,
but
what,
as
though,
you're
not,
saying, technology is also catching up, so some of this is going to meet in the middle too. I think what you said originally was pretty accurate.
Right. Right.
No, I mean it is. I mean, but even so, Brad. I mean, one of the things that I learned this weekend, because I don't know if you guys follow this, but the new iPhone came out. And so if you don't already have an iPhone, it's great. You can go down and buy one of the new ones. But if you do have an existing iPhone, the software for the new one is available for yours too. And one of the things they've added are applications that now run native on the iPhone, where before, if it wasn't already on the iPhone and someone wanted to make a program for it, it had to run over the web. So essentially, you were using the iPhone's browser to connect to the web and then run an application off the web. Whereas now, it's an application that runs right on the iPhone and does the connecting to the web itself. So, for example, before yesterday, if I wanted to use Twitter, I had to go on the web, go to Twitter, and read Twitter via the website. Now I have a handy little icon on my iPhone. It launches Twitterific, and it gives it to me just like a program. So what I'm saying is, I think the really exciting thing are applications that will run on these mobile devices that will deliver an experience to our readers that are designed the way that we want it, that aren't just them connecting to the web via their phone. It'll be an application with a delivery system where, you know, we're showing them the panels in the order that we want to. You know what I mean? We don't have to worry about how the browser looks on different phones. I think it's a very exciting time for that kind of stuff. And I think the iPhone and other smartphones like that with touchscreens and things will really push that technology and give us a pretty clean and brand new canvas to do some really fun stuff with our comics.
Well, we've talked before, because it's sort of in two very different directions that, like, you know, screen resolutions and screen abilities at home are getting better and better every year, such that I think the websites that were 800 wide are becoming 1,000 wide and will probably all become 1,500 wide. You know, and we can foresee a day where on the web, at least visually, if not on the actual file size, it'll seem pretty high res, you know, at home. But are you guys imagining a day where you're going to have 9 differently sized files for the same cartoon on a server somewhere? Or are you imagining that this is going to be some sort of dynamic system like the iPhone that will zoom and resize as needed?
I can't imagine having different sized files, no.
Because that's one of the things that has kept me and probably you guys from doing anything that's sort of a mobile.sheldoncomics.com kind of thing, is that just writing or anticipating every different format for every different telco around the world is like, it's enough to just to keep you from doing anything, because you you know, I can't even in the U.S. figure out the difference between a BlackBerry, a Sidekick, and an iPhone screen resolutions on T-Mobile, Sprint, and Verizon, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, there's just too many options. And so I think what's going to happen is more and more like what Apple's doing, which is letting the technology take from the web as it exists already rather than forcing the millions of individual sites around the world to conform to some new mobile standard. So it's not for lack of doing anything. It's more that's where I foresee technology heading is letting the mobile device adapt to the web rather than the web adapt to the mobile device.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to start recording an MP3 for every strip that people can download to their phones where I just describe it. it's called PvP Described, and it's just like, oh, today's PvP, but I'm on the bus. I don't have a device that can read the web. Hold on a second. Bloop, beep. It's me going, all right, so in today's strip, okay, panel one is Brent. Brent walks in, and he's like, yo, I love coffee. Loves me some coffee. You know what? Never mind. That's not a very good one. Let's skip back one. This was a better
one. you know what?
I guess this was better.
And in the meantime, you're eating a hoagie and drinking a Lipton green tea going, all right, here we go. So panel two. All right. Sheldon told him some sort of device. I guess it could be a phone. It might be a computer. That's not important. Let's not focus on that. That's it's not critical to the joke. He's wearing shoes. You know what? You get overly descriptive. That's not important either. Hold on. Let me talk. Okay, so then the duck walks in. But he's got this funny look on his face. You got to see this look. When you get home, I got to tell you. I know you're listening to the audio version now, but when you got to see the look on the duck's face. He's got a little sprock in him. He's a little slice of something, that guy.
Lamb of God, that duck. Lamb of God.
I tell you what, that duck, he just brings a little bit of joy into my life. Anyway, all right, let's move on to panel two. Some sort of lizard. Oh, he's crazy, that little guy.
It's time for your Audible Evil Ink Strip with Brad Geiger. Okay, today's strip, we start with Dr. Manus, and he's watching a movie. He's champing at the bit to watch this movie. Speaking of movies, my six-year-old loves Abbott and Costello. Oh, boy. Funny story. And then he goes, so anyway, that's how my kid watched Young Frankenstein. Tune in tomorrow for another Evil Ink. Click. I don't know what happened to my accent there at the end. Brad went from being... I think he was like at one point he was Kansas City, then he was from like Fargo, and then at the end he was from New York. I don't know. He's a chameleon.
But the best would be at the end of that audio file though. You're like, all right, tune in tomorrow for tomorrow's Evil Ink. Click. All right, I think I turned this off. How do I turn this?
No, it's Brad going click.
No, but he doesn't actually know how to turn off the file. He's like, I think I got it. Hold on. Is it this button? What is it? What's the button? I got it. Hey, honey, come in here. How do I turn off the Evil Ink recording audio file? Beep. That's the end.
Yeah.
Then I just
Brad
run out of tape. And then I just run out of tape.
Yeah. You hear Brad in the meantime. He's doing, no, this is him doing the Evil Ink audio file. All right. So in panel three, I got to tell you, Lightning Lady, a lot of cleavage in this shot. You got to check this out. And then all of a sudden, brr, brr, oh, hold on a second. Yeah, it is a Brad guy. Why is he from New York all of a sudden? What
I don't
am I
know.
Doing?
It's a funnier accent, to be honest.
It is. Brad Geiger, yeah, you coming to do the plumbing or what? I called you 4 hours ago. This thing can't stop it itself. All right, I'll see you in a minute. Click. All right, back to panel four. Boy, more cleavage in this shot, I gotta tell you.
I really pictured it being like you dialed Evil Ink. Like, it was for the phone, right? So you actually call Brad. It's like, bring, bring. Hello? Yeah, I'm dialing Evil Ink. Right. All right, so today's strip. You got the Dr. Heinous there. He's doing his evil thing. In comes Judge McGill with the cleavage. I forget what her name is. She says something funny. Bye, bada bing, bada boom. Last panel, you got a pun. We're out. And then it's like, thanks for calling Evil Ink. Click. And then the guy on the phone goes, did he just say click? And Brad goes, dial tone.
You know what's funny is that actually none of us are doing these files. We've clearly hired some cabbie from New York, and he's like trying to describe our characters. All right, there's some sort of cat. I think his name is Scratch Angry. Anyway, he's coming in.
Angry.
He's really he's doing his business. He's got his claws out. He's coming up.
Let's see. All right, next. You know what? It's another panda attack. It's not very funny. Brink gets eaten at the end. Ooh, we've seen it before,
hey,
right?
Call Mara. Move your
you know
effing truck.
I think that's called going back to the well. Anyway, all right, let's go to panel three here. All right, so then we got School the Troll. He's coming in there. He's funny. He's bounding in. He's happy to see everybody. And then
he's got a bad flatulence problem. That one.
That one. You remember
the taxi
that
driver
I described?
Has to take time out every now and again and shout at the traffic, though. He's got to be like halfway through. And then he's going to come over here and he says, hey, the School the Troll, he's going to go through. He's a blue. Hey, move your effing truck. We're not out here in a party. We're not having a parade out here.
This ain't no IKEA parking lot. Go back to Jersey. Hey, come on now.
Okay, now, where was I?
Where was I? Anyway, he fought it. The end. So, and to answer
your question, fart and we're out.
That is what we've done to get.
So we hired a New York cabbie. So
but,
can
I be really like super mean here for a second to answer the second part of the question?
Sure.
Please do.
As someone who grew up in West Des Moines, Iowa, a very good friend of mine named Kimberly, who was born blind, then moved to Dallas, Texas during my college years, and is still very good friends with a man named Reginald, who lost his sight at the age of 16. I would like to say proudly, and without fear of retaliation, that I have done jack squat to make my strip accessible for the blind. It's a comic strip, and you're blind. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do for you. I'm not happy about the situation. I know Reggie and Kim weren't happy about the situation.
Oh, God.
But I'm a fat guy, and you don't see me walking up to, like, I don't know.
Hey,
like,
Scott, how can we make track and field events more accessible for
exactly.
you?
Exactly. You know how? You can't. Because I'm fat, and I can't run very fast. So, honestly, I got very excited at an early age about the visual arts. My trade is the visual arts. Now, if I was a musician, you have every right to get mad at me if I'm not making my work accessible to you. Because I am not doing my job. Because
like
my chosen profession are the audio arts.
Right. If you play your instrument like way too quietly, now that would be going over the line.
Exactly. Almost insulting. But like my chosen profession are the visual arts, and the only requirement for you to enjoy it is you have to have working eyes.
You know what, Scott? Scott, I have to stop you because you are undercutting Murray the cab driver's work entirely. That man works tirelessly to describe PvP strips for the audience, and you are pulling the rug out from under Murray, and that's ridiculous.
Listen, it's one thing to record strips for people on the go that are busy, all right? They're productive members of society, all right? As someone who grew up with two people who were blind, these guys are lazy people. Let me tell you. Blind people. No, I'm just kidding. I got to tell you, either way, I know we were enjoying the Murray the cab driver, but can I ask you guys a question? Have you ever, ever described your strip to a person and not immediately regretted doing it?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
It's
I know
living
exactly
death.
What you're talking about. It's yeah. It's horrible.
Audiobooks, fantastic. I listen to them all the time. But if someone started reading – Calvin and Hobbes to me, or Doonesbury to me, or Bloom County to me, you've got to stop them. It's like people that see a comedian the next day try to recreate the act.
Uh-huh. And an offshoot of that, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, I read your strip yesterday and I didn't get it. Here's a tip. Don't ever try to explain it to them. Just laugh and say, well, you know what? You know,
it wasn't
you can't
very
hit
funny.
All the times. Yeah, and just kind of shrug it off and change the subject to anything, religion, politics, child abuse, something. Because if
child
you start
abuse.
Trying, I
jeez,
don't care.
Brad,
what you change,
way to throw that in the list.
I don't care what you change the subject to. Just change the subject. Because if you try to explain your joke, you're never going to be able to write another joke for the next 2 weeks because you feel so horrible about how that went down.
Now, you know what? I'm going to disagree with you guys. I think you are undercutting Murray's descriptive abilities, and I do not like it. I think it's mean, and I think it's mean-spirited.
Wow.
Murray's calling in every day. So it's a dog, right? But he's got a brain attached to his head. He's it's crazy. You gotta imagine this in your head. It's a dog, but with a brain on his head. But the brain is what's powering the dog, I think. But you know what? You know what? The tail wags that dog sometimes. I'll tell you what. That's what I'm feeling like. All
wow.
right. Anyway. All right. Call in tomorrow. Anyway, I'm gonna describe Starslip. There's some sort of ant-like creature. He's doing something. I don't know what he does. Sorry, I'm having two tags. I would love to hear Chris actually do the audio file for his Starslip. That would, for him, would be living death. I can imagine nothing no worse fate for Chris than having to describe his own jokes. All right, so we've pretty much covered that. Shall we move on to the next question for the evening?
Yeah, let's. And let's hope there's taxi drivers involved.
Sorry, I know. I'm going back to the well on that. All right, here we go.
But how might a taxi driver answer that question?
Hey, Brad, you know what? You know what, Brad? I put in a full day's work for you. I put in that pizza don't bring itself home. All right, here we go. All right. Hey, guys. I understand that Webcomics Weekly is focused more on the career aspects of starting up and running a webcomic business, but I would love to hear you guys break out of that mentality for a few minutes and brainstorm a what-if scenario. Say you had no desire or need to make money off of your webcomic. Without worrying about page views, web stats, advertising, selling products, or even having to cater to your audience, what would you choose to focus on instead? Where would your priorities be? Thanks, Thea.
No, please let that be a millionaire that wants to make that happen for one of us.
It's Howard Hughes writing in. All right, let's say you guys had a lot of money.
Scott, it's Howard Hughes. I've kept myself on ice all these years. We've solved cancer for me, at least. I'm alive again. Now listen.
Scott, I've got a lot of jars I want to give you.
Yes. I have Kleenex boxes on my feet, and I'm urinating into milk jugs, but I'm still rich, and I like your comic.
And unfortunately, I've gone blind.
Wow. Heyo. Hold the phone.
Nothing? Sky Mall? Anything?
Wait a minute. Did someone just join us online?
I think someone just joined us online.
Be still the pitter-patter of my heart. Is that a young Christopher Straub?
Hit record.
Oh, there he is.
Hey, this is just in time, because didn't you say you wanted to hear how Chris would describe one of his comics?
Yes.
All
right, Chris.
File?
We're diving right in. I want to jump back on this. If you had to read Starslip for an audio file. Oh.
Now. All right.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So if you had to read in an audio file your Starslip, today's Starslip crisis or any Starslip crisis, how would you do it? How would you describe it? I want to hear that done.
What do you mean? How would you describe it, or how would I describe the premise, or how would I?
Pretend,
read?
That, pretend that the president of the United States and a millionaire that loves comics are both blind, and they want you to somehow read like an audio book Starslip to them.
Today's Starslip crisis.
All right, you want me to load it up? This is going to be a bear.
This is Monday, July 14th, 2008. If
Monday,
all right,
Mr. President, it's an honor to be speaking with you tonight.
Mr. Millionaire.
Why am I so giddy at this? All right, keep going.
Welcome to the so here we go. Okay, so this strip has four panels. I don't know if you know that, but envision four panels in your mind, even though you're blind and you're not able to do that.
Well, it's a panel.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So the millionaire is also incontinent. I love that. Why does the panel have squares?
I'm voiding right now. Just read the comic. All right, so in the first panel, there's a monolith, and Vanderbeam's been crying. And the monolith goes, and Vanderbeam goes, what? And then he turns around, and there's the nanny, which is this piece of museum stuff he was looking for. And he says, the piece, it's where it belongs. Oh, Fuseli, you do love me. And then the two monoliths are talking to each other in the third panel, and he says, his creation is brilliant. He is an asset to the consortium. And the other one says, agreed. And then in the fourth panel, the one says, truly he plucks genius from the arms of madness. And then you could see in the background there, Vanderbeam is kissing the floor. And the other monolith says, yeah, no, he's creeping. Do I get the money?
Do I get the money?
Chris Straub, I'm happy to report that you get $1 million for that. I didn't quite follow panel to panel. I closed my eyes, actually. I actually did close my eyes, and I couldn't quite follow what was going on there, but that's all right. You proved our point, now, which is that audio files for comic strips would not work at all.
Wait, is that somebody asked whether or not? No.
Now, Chris, one of the questions was, what have you done to make your comic strip more accessible to the blind?
And to cab drivers.
I figure that's what this podcast is for. You can listen to this.
Wow, that's a good answer.
You know what? Touche. Let's top 10 answers on the board. Ding! All right, nice work, Chris Straub. There we go.
What do you want?
And now I'm going to kiss your sister. All right, there we go. Moving
there it
on
is.
On.
Chris, thank you. I thought I was going to be the only one during this podcast to just get... If some blind indignance towards the blind. Like, what do you want from me?
No, if you're blind, I mean, I don't know how we can do that. I know they have, like, DVS for TV shows and stuff. But, I mean, well, how can I know? This is actually a good question that you would ask of somebody who's blind. Have you ever had a comic strip read to you? And if so, do they just go, oh, why? That's not funny. Because they have to have it described entirely.
And the question is, dear blind person, have you ever had a comic read to you more than once? Like, obviously one time you went for it. But after that...
And then the rest of the family's like, nah, I'm not going there again. I'm not reading that.
Oh, God, that is my favorite Garfield. Read it again. Read it again to me. This is good stuff. Read panel 3 again. Okay, Garfield is about to kick Odie.
You know what's really sad is there's probably a key... unlocking the secret of improving comics by reading them to blind people, because it's a visual medium, right? So like it's like, you know, blind people, their hearing gets super great because they don't rely on their sight. What if they're like, guys, this is the same Kathy you read me yesterday? No, it's a different one. It's completely different. No, it's the same Kathy. No, see, today
can
she
see beyond
yesterday
it.
She was upset about the swimsuit she didn't fit into, and today she's upset about the
chocolate cake that she wanted to eat.
The chocolate cake that she wants to eat. And then, the blind person's like, don't you see? It's the same strip. And we go, no, it's not the – it's – no.
No, Scott, you go,
just as cartoonists.
Ack.
As cartoonists, we're all suddenly going, Kathy, it's made of people. Can't you see? It's made of people.
And then the blind guy's like, we're on to something. Read me Garfield. And then your dad shows up and is like, no, there's some things humans weren't meant to figure out.
The people have Garfield.
I need this. Don't ruin it for me.
I'll give up, Kathy. And I'll give up for better or for worse. But leave me my Mondays.
I want my apartment 3G.
I mean, let's face it. I've always known that Marmaduke is just a big dog, but I need my Garfield.
The funny thing about that is, do you guys remember the Saturday Night Live skit where John Larroquette died and he was asking God all these questions like, what was the closest I ever got to being, you know, wealthy but missed? He's like, oh, one time you're on the beach and you walked right over a treasure chest full of gold. If you had just... even stopped and dug 2 feet, you've been rich. Oh, darn it. What's the grossest thing that ever happened that I wasn't aware of? One time you ate an earwig, you know, and then he turns to God and he goes, what's the one thing about Earth and my life there that would shock me the most? And God said, professional wrestling was real. And I think that if the blind guy – could decipher comics, he would like, it wouldn't be just that he would reveal that like Kathy and Garfield are crap, but we would find out that there's like the Rosetta Stone of all humanity is in Love Is, right? And we've been missing it.
Yeah.
God, don't you see? They're naked and it's beautiful. They're pure. It's so
it
pure.
It actually ties science and religion and philosophy and theology together in such a beautiful, simple way. And we're like, oh, we missed it. Oh, God. It was there all along.
But then it would drive us insane like that Twilight Zone episode. Right?
And you can't go back.
No, and then you're compelled to tell others, and then it spreads, and then you know, one guy's trying to... We've got to stop the guy from broadcasting the meaning of Love Is at the radio station. He'll destroy us all! I'm sorry. I don't know why I went there. I'm sorry. I know it's not Abbott and Costello meet Dracula, but...
Excuse me, I... Oh, really?
So, Chris...
Yeah.
So you're a little late to the podcast. What were you out doing?
Yeah, I'm sure it was some. I'm sure it was something manly.
It was very. Right? You were breaking granite with a sledgehammer, right? Just breaking.
No. He was sawing down trees. I'm sure I can imagine, right?
I was doing both of those things at a George Michael concert. Erica's parents had two tickets and they couldn't use them, so we went.
And I would actually imagine that George Michael would be pretty good in concert. Was he good?
Oh my God, I can't believe what they had in that concert. They had a jumbotron screen that wrapped around to the floor of the stage where he was standing.
Wow,
it was crazy.
Hey, you had two tickets? You say
what?
You had two tickets?
Like, you didn't invite Brad?
Brad, how is that a conversational? How is that a conversational point, Brad? So, yes,
no, I wanted to know.
Oh, all right.
But let me tell you something. I've never heard his music before. I've heard the thing on Eli Stone. That's it.
I wanted to know who he took with him. His father figure.
Oh.
No, I took my faith. What?
Sky Mall, anyone?
I took freedom.
Callback.
You took freedom?
I took freedom.
I thought you were going to say something like...
Wicker, Scott.
Nothing. I was trying to pull some stuff out of Wham, but...
Can I admit to some regional prejudice here in saying that I never would have thought that there would be a George Michael tour that would include Dallas, Texas?
He lives here.
What is that conversation? Buck, Suzanne, Jimmy, y'all want to go down and see some of that George Michael? Apparently, you got to have faith.
Listen, Dave. In fairness, come on. Only 95% of the people who live in this area sound like that.
No, I'm serious. He lives in this city. He lives in Dallas.
Stop
it.
He does live in Dallas?
No. Yes, he
no.
lives in Dallas.
I will punch you. He does not live in Dallas.
No,
guys,
he has a house behind.
Guys, listen. I'm a crazy homosexual Brit. I need a new place to live. London is not doing it for me. What's a good place in the States? Let's just start throwing out some names.
Well, let's say...
What about Dallas, Texas? Stop digging. Drunk. Stop digging. We've struck oil. Dallas,
Why,
Texas.
Really?
One is he a chimney sweep? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a chimney sweep.
Chimney, chim, chim, chabroo. People in Dallas are very tolerant to homosexuals.
Roy, what do you say to Alabama? Would that be all right? We can go down to Alabama. Right, that seems like a right friendly place. Let's go down to Alabama. It seems like it's a great place
to
do.
Oh, my God. I don't even know George Michael, but these
Let's
are the worst impressions.
I got an
ever.
Idea. Let's buy an acre in between two Baptist churches. And, we're nothing but assless chaps. Assless chaps? Assless chaps?
Dallas, Texas, jetting away as we speak. Right, all right.
All the planes in England sound like the Jetsons car.
He's from the Jetsons, yeah.
Wow, I learn something new every day. I never would have guessed that George Michael would live in Dallas, Texas.
Come on.
Oh, God.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
I Wikipedia'd it.
I like how Brad is laughing
continuously
this whole time.
Oh.
Prince called him and said... I'm in Minnesota. It's all you've got to do this. You've got find a place completely contrary.
Look, don't you see? They're setting up homes in strategic positions around the globe.
Guys, I have to call your attention to this. Brad has been laughing nonstop for the last 4 minutes. He has not stopped laughing.
Yeah, Brad, by the way, remember last week when you were sitting there listening to the podcast, desperate to interject something? Well, this is all you ever interject when you're here. Maybe from now on, we should just do the podcast without you, okay? You record your parts listening and then mail it to me, and I'll just stick them in.
All I've got is a thing about Boy George in Vermont, and I can't do the accent.
You bastards!
Wow. All we need, Brad, all we need is like 2 minutes of loop laughter and an occasional 1930s popular culture reference. That's all we need. Do you guys, let me tell you, do you guys remember Gabby Hayes? All right, I got a quick story about this. Quick Gabby Hayes story. All right, here we go.
Yeah, we do the whole podcast, and then we're like, oh, man, that was awesome. What an incredible discussion about the craft of making webcomics. And now, Brad Geiger's take, and Brad goes, hey, everybody, Brad Geiger here. Victor Borga, Gabby Hayes, Abbott Costello, meet Dracula. Opium. I've been Brad Geiger. Click. Dial tone.
Oh, that's good stuff. That is good. That is down-home humor right there. That is delicious.
Oh, God.
Well, did we actually end up answering that question? Okay, we did. Yeah. Hold on. Let me, Chris, for your benefit, I'm gonna give you the quick version of this question. It was from Thea. It said, say you had no need or desire to make money off your webcomic, because we are very often take it from a business standpoint, without worrying about page views, web stats, advertising, selling products, or even having to cater to your audience, what would you choose to focus on instead with your webcomic? Where would your priorities be?
Did you catch that, Chris?
Yeah, I got it.
All right, well, first of all, it's one day a week. Every other week. No. I think the first thing is that, and I've said a million times in the past, but if I didn't have to worry about page views or ad money or anything like that, my website would look completely different without having to worry about folding ads into it. Oh my God, it would become as much a creative part of the site as anything else, man. I mean, there's so many beautiful web designs out there that I will never be able to implement because I've got to figure out a way to fit in the standard size ads around it all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would immediately redesign the website to be ad free just to be able to finally do a design creatively that didn't have to worry about folding them in.
I think that maybe the question though seemed to be posed too broadly, because here I am going, well, okay, if I don't care about audience, I don't care about updates, I don't care about art or writing, I don't care about comics as an art form, I guess I would be a programmer.
Carpenter, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. I wouldn't do anything with them then. But I mean, how would
it change? That's kind of where I was led with the question too, is if you take enough of that stuff away, it's like, why am I doing this anymore? I mean, to a certain extent, we're doing this to connect with people and commerce becomes a part of it, I don't know how much, other than Scott has a good point, you'd take the ads off. But as far as like the comic strip that I do, I think I'd still be doing the same comic strip that I do. I think I'd still be doing it much the same way.
Would you really reduce it like in frequency? Because I don't think I would. I would still want it
to
be daily.
No, but guys, because like think about this. It's almost, I'm almost afraid to answer the question. But I think what the person asking is really trying to do is get us to break free of things that we do because we're trying to generate a revenue stream, or we're trying to generate page views and more traffic. Like, for example, PvP, the comic book, comes out every month when it's on time. But if I didn't have to worry about keeping it in the public eye, keeping sales up, I don't think I would do a monthly title. I think I would do beautiful collections on a regular – you know what I mean? Like, there's – I think the theme, the spirit of the question is there anything that you're doing right now that's solely based on a marketing standpoint, or
consider this. Maybe, I mean, clearly advertising and stuff like that, that's in there because it needs to be, and it is a consideration. But what about strips that you do where you got to catch people up? Like the first panel of the strip in this storyline is spent going, Skull's in jail, and now what are we going to do? You know, like stuff that you have to do because you're worried that the person is not going to remember from Friday what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff like that could be cut out.
Why? Why would it be?
Well, because then you don't, if you're not worried about whether or not the person is going to follow along, if you're not worried about retention in that way, you know, you could say, look, if you don't know what happened, just read Fridays again. Go back. Don't look at this.
I don't know. I guess that's how I feel about it now. But I'm trying myself to kind of to divine the spirit of this question. Who asked it? Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
No, I did not ask it. Thea with no website asked it, but
her. Again.
I think. No, you know what?
Oh my god!
You know what, guys? I've discovered George Michael makes me punchy. puts me in a bad mood. I guess.
I don't have a funny Brad laugh to go with that, but that really tickled me. Chris going, oh, her again.
No, can I give you guys my answer to this? Is that
yeah.
I think you guys said it Brad said it in a similar way to how I would say it. Is that part of why you do art is granted is because you have something you want to say. There's all of that art for art's sake, but part of why you express art to the world is there's a certain hunger that goes with it. And so if your life is satiated with money, or if you don't need anything, and if you have everything that you could want for in life, I think in general your productivity in anything and everything in life drops dramatically. So it's not just a matter of how would you do it. It's like what would drive you to do it. It's kind of like, you know, those trust fund kids that and not to get weird on it, but they all get into massive depressions do self-destructive things because their life, you know, it's like a human life without sacrifice or needing to work hard.
They didn't earn anything.
Weird. Yeah, right. And so they become they're not motivated by anything.
There's also something about that in my mind, when I hear that question is it almost vilifies marketing and commerce and stuff like that. It, like what would you do if all those things were taken away and it were somehow better? But keeping marketing in mind when I do my comic helps me to do a better comic. I mean, there's some very basic principles to marketing that means that I'm able to make my comic accessible to a larger number of people. And that's nothing but a good thing. And all these things that she's taking away are, in reality, good things. Marketing is not a bad thing. Commerce is not a bad thing. Commerce is making your stuff accessible to people to the extent that they're willing to pay money for it. That means that you're making take the money out of it, you're making a connection there. And that takes a lot of work, and it's very satisfying to build that relationship.
Yeah.
So basically the answer to this question is the end of Star Trek 5.
Is that where they shoot Spock into space?
No. Brad, come on! That's the one where Spock's brother starts going around and getting a cult together by mentally removing all of their pain, all their painful memories, and then he convinces the doctor to be like, look at your past. Your father, he was dying. Yes, we couldn't cure his disease, so you killed him. I put him out of his misery, and then what happened? And then we found the cure! We found the cure! And he's like, oh, let go of your pain. And then he turns to Kirk and he goes, oh, God, Jim, you've got to do it. It's feel free of your pain. And then Kirk goes, I want my pain. I need my pain. And that's us. We need it. If we didn't have
that's
all this.
That's the truth.
Yeah. So Captain Kirk the answer.
Let me flip around my earlier answer, and this is a fun little mind game to play. All right, so you know how Emily Dickinson never published anything in her life? She wrote in her little attic by herself, and really, I think she shared her poems with like one or two people the entire time she was alive.
That's a bummer.
And Walt Whitman, I think, wrote Leaves of Grass and never shared it with anyone, right? Until after he was dead, they found it, if I'm correct. I might not be right there. But so there is the possibility that you can write. But here's my mind experiment. What if Bill Watterson right now in Ohio is sitting there working on some strip that no one will ever see until he's dead, that is not catering to any audience, it's not trying to get money, but when we read it in 2025, it's going to be the most fantastic comic strip, better than Crazy Cat, better than Little Nemo, better than Peanuts, better than Calvin and Hobbes itself. What if that's going on right now and we don't even know about it?
Then that's a huge loss because we're not able to tell him how much we like it.
Yeah.
Also, it's a huge loss because I've got a good feeling that when we see it, it's gonna make no sense unless we're a nutty hermit that's hopped up on peyote that he made out of compressed Calvin peen on the Ford logo stickers.
No, seriously, just because Emily Dickinson and Walt Whitman were great poets doesn't mean that that's a great that their life situations were great for any artist. I mean, I would feel horrible if that's what's happening right now in Ohio, because what good is it to bring that stuff out into the world after you're dead? It's a useless thing.
I'm not saying this is the life I'm choosing for myself, and I'll see you guys later. What I'm saying is we should at least acknowledge that there have been fantastic bits of art that have contributed to humanity, but whose
Dave, what great
didn't...
comic strip are you sitting on?
You're
waiting to die.
And then Chris, I suddenly go creepy. You won't see it for 48 years.
No, Dave says, well, Dave goes, well, it used to have a hermit with peyote in it, but it doesn't.
But I'm writing him out. Or even better, I go, well, Chris, you'll never see it, but I will let Murray read it to you. Okay, here's what we're looking at. We're looking at a giant aardvark. There's an aardvark. He's sitting in panel one, right? But he's on some sort of boat. All right, it clearly is set in Elizabethan England. All right, here we go. So we're in panel one. The aardvark's dressed like Shakespeare. All right, it looks like he's holding some sort of staff. Oh, no, it's not a staff. It's a walking stick. Anyway, so the aardvark – anyway, so that's my unshared genius. No, I thought that would be a fun thought experiment for a minute to talk about the possibility that Bill Watterson is creating some genius that we will never see until he's dead.
I think he's just – I heard he was just painting landscapes.
Well, that's what I heard too. But I'm – God damn it. I'm trying to do a thought experiment. You guys won't go along with
it. No. Dave, there is no such person as Bill Watterson. Let's just move on. It doesn't matter.
Okay, Dave, let's consider it.
What would that mean if it's this brilliant comic strip that has not been created for money, it wasn't created for an audience, and we won't see it for 30 years? What does that mean as a comic strip? What does that mean
your point is moot because it was born out of the man honing his skill for 10 years in the gauntlet that was doing stuff for the public. Face!
Touché! No, actually, I will give you credit for that. And you know what?
Face. I'm sorry.
Guys,
that was my one. That was it. I got it.
No, that was
my
one
point for the year.
It's a good one.
And now that you have it, every mid-80s British rock star has to move to Dallas based on that winning point right there. So,
but it's true, right? Like, I mean, who was it you were saying wrote a bunch of stuff until and then? Shut up,
who's
Brad.
Who's the lady who did
who's
the
lady? I mean,
who is the nice lady? What? Hey, pretty lady. What was the
that
thing?
Might reinforce my point, or it might to the point that I'm poorly read, ignorant idiot. But so you're saying Emily Parsons? What was her name?
Emily Post.
Betty Crocker. Betty Crocker.
No, Emily Post. Yes, let's just say Betty Crocker for the argument.
Well, I was just saying there are examples of people that were never in the public. The first thing that was ever in the public was stuff that was discovered after their death.
Right, right. That honed their craft, that made beautiful art that professors still read 40 years on and every student is forced to read. I mean, what if there's some – okay, let's say there's a comic strip by Joe Blow that none of us have ever heard of in Phoenix, Arizona. And he will go to his grave, but they'll find this archive of 10,000 comic strips which summarizes what it is to be a human being. With laughter and joy and occasional Kathy Act jokes.
I don't know what it means. Nobody's going to get to read it.
It means well known that Joe Blow is a pen name that Bill Watterson works under. No, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things, man. It really seems to me that there's a lot of people that are like, well, man, you know, why are you always worrying about making art for money? Why don't you just make art for art's sake? And it just seems to me like people that were, if people truly made art for art's sake, they would be in their room, they'd paint it, and they'd look at it and go, ah, art. And then they'd burn it. Right? Like,
I think so.
It's like, I mean, I got to tell you, have you ever read something that, I can't think of a good example now, but it's supposed to be like, oh, this is a secret diary. And he wrote that knowing somebody would read it one day. Like, it's written specifically so that someone will read it one day. It just seems to me like, I don't know, is there really any art that isn't created with the concept that one day someone will see it? So,
but the question is, is it art, though? Because, like, I'm thinking, I know an example of that that wasn't art. It was Lovecraft had written a bunch of story ideas down, and he didn't intend for anybody to read that, because now reading them, a lot of them are really dumb. You know?
Well, what you're saying is someone went and said, oh, we're out of Lovecraft stuff. What's this? Oh, is his
like,
notebook.
Oh, my God, we found his notebook with his ideas, and it's like, how a bat can turn into a man, and then it's gone. I'm like, come on. That's stupid.
And all they did was,
you know what?
All they did was erase the parts where he went, horrible ideas, don't use.
Yeah, exactly. Well, didn't Tolkien's son do that with all his notes, too? Like, they've been producing, like, 14 books a year where it's like, what if the hobbits are 10 feet tall? Scratch off, scratch out, scratch out. You know, it's like, but then they make a book out of it, and you're like, come on, Chris, we get it already. Your dad was a genius. You are not. Stop printing this stuff.
Yeah, I always give my friend Robert Kirkman a hard time because I asked him one time if I could read one of his scripts so I could see how a comic book script is written out. And, he was gracious enough to let me see it, but he's never shown his scripts to anyone but the artists that he gives them to, and most of the artists that Robert works with are people he's known for years, like have been his friend since junior high. So I get his script, and it's like, Invincible jumps over the bridge and lands square on the back of the villain. No, scratch it. He goes under the bridge. And I called him, and I'm like, there's like five places in this script where you're like, he punches through the car. No, you know what? He lifts the car up and throws it on him. No, he punches through it. And I'm like, why wouldn't you just erase that and then fix it? Why not? If you change your mind, you'd think you'd hit, no, you know what? Maybe you should punch through the car, backspace. And he goes, I'm stream of consciousness. They know what to do. They know to read the whole thing.
Would it be funny if it's like the end product is him punching through the car, then picking up and throwing it, then him flying over the bridge under the bridge?
Yeah. What if someone found those scripts and produced all the alternate? It looks like a Choose Your Own Adventure Robert Kirkman comic. Based on
I picture being the penciler and doing this beautiful splash page of him jumping over the bridge and then turning the page and saying, "No, scratch that." He goes under the bridge and going, ah, you did it to me again.
Yeah. I asked him if he ever gets a call, like from his artist, and going, hey, man, I drew that panel where he went under the bridge. It was awesome. It was a page and a half. And Robert's like, yeah. He's like, and then the next page he said, screw it. He goes under the bridge. Yeah. He's going over the bridge, dude.
No,
I got
this?
News
how
for you,
this?
Robert. Either he's going over the bridge or you're going over the bridge.
All right. No, hold on a second. Look at this panel you drew for me. All right. You've got him jumping over the bridge, which was incorrect. But then rather than fix it, you just erased the sky and drew the underside of a bridge above him. So apparently he's jumping under the bridge over a very small bridge model. Yes. Well, what's wrong with that? That's fine.
Yes, there was a museum showing of bridges.
Somebody threw out a very small
happen.
Bridge.
That's symbolism.
Are we still talking about webcomics?
No,
yes. We haven't talked about webcomics since we started.
Okay,
but we've done a brilliant dissertation on taxi cab drivers, Dave.
Oh, all right. So in this third panel, Mr. Jinx, he's producing some sort of acid. I'm not sure what he's doing. He's shooting it out at somebody. He's crazy, this guy. I don't know what he is. An ant, a bug, some sort of killer creature.
He's making me laugh.
Yeah, I tell you what. He's got these bug eyes that were clearly lifted from that Flaco character. I don't know what we're talking about here. Did you like how I worked that in? Anyway.
Yeah.
All
no.
right.
No, I didn't. Dave, I did not. I did not like
that. You'll be hearing from my attorney. You'll be hearing from my attorney. Well, should we wrap it up, gents?
Yeah, I'm going to be up early tomorrow.
A mere
Let's
six business days to the opening of San Diego
Comic Con. No. Wait,
what?
We couldn't make a whole podcast without you mentioning how close we are to San Diego.
Because
well,
I'm
guys.
Living under a sheet of terror right now. I can't get it out of my mind.
What's left to do? Everything's done, right? Everybody's finished?
Yeah, right. We're all done.
We're all squared away.
Actually, I have one box to ship out tomorrow that is going to be sent UPS ground, and we'll easily make it there on time. And that's it. I'm done. Other than getting in the plane and getting up there.
Well, all right, then. I'm hanging up in anger.
How about you guys?
Since you're done.
I'm pretty much done. I'm pretty much ready to go.
Well, see, here's where – all right, I'll be honest. Here's where me living close is biting me in the butt because you guys are all done and you've got all your stuff shipped off. Because I can drive down the Tuesday or Wednesday before, I'm literally going to American Apparel to pick up an order of T-shirts probably on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I'm like, gotta get this done.
Wait a minute. You haven't printed – you're just buying the shirts? Have you printed –
Oh, shut up, Scott. Stop. Yes, I haven't started.
But how do you – I mean, where are you getting them printed?
Well, that's the beautiful thing about living in a large metropolitan area. I could just drive. I go down to American Apparel. I say hi to all the well-paid American textile workers, and then I drive two blocks in Los Angeles and get it printed up.
Yes, I've heard that glowering is a sign of friendliness in other cultures, Dave. Oh, this guy again.
Oh, here he goes. There he is. So yeah, so it's all I can do it all local, guy. Scott. To answer your question, I don't, and I save a bundle by doing that actually. That's my story. Yeah.
So in your face is pretty much the
No, not at all in your face. I wish I was done. I'm terrified that I am not done.
With the sentence.
We better wrap this up. He's losing steam quick.
The terror was getting hold of me. All right, yes, let's wrap it up. You've been listening to Webcomics Weekly. Joining us lately, Chris Straub of Starslit.com, our dear friend Brad Geiger of Evil Hyphen. What's the best way to say it?
Evil. Now you got me doing it. Evil-comic.com.
Look at that radio presentation. Evil-comic.com. And then, of course, also with Dallas Scott Gertz of PvPOnline.com. And I'm Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com. Wishing you another fantastic week. Top of the hour. We got traffic coming out of the 5. All right. Looks like the Mets are doing well. All right. Anyway, that's about it. So we will see you next week with more wonderful tales of us being nervous about San Diego.
Yeah, and then you can meet us at San Diego where you will see that we actually are drinking the entire time.
That's right.
just to recover. All right.
There we are. Sad. Sad ending.
Sad. Well, hey, you know what? At some point in the future, we should mention that we're doing two. Did we already mention the two talks? Am I forgetting that we already mentioned that we're doing two talks in San Diego?
Oh, guys, also.
One at the beginning of the day and one at the end of the day.
Have you right. mentioned where we are sitting?
2729.
That's right. The Image Comics booth. That's where at least
oh,
that's where
the
Brad and Dave and me will
29?
Be. That is the number. Yes.
2729. I'll be at.
You'll be at 1300 or 1400 block.
14. I don't know. Well, hold on. Now
I do love.
I want to look it up. Talk amongst yourselves.
I do love how when the issue of San Diego comes up, we literally all do turn to mush mentally. We're all like, I don't know, I'm on an aisle somewhere. I'm doing
hey, can
something
I ask
with
us
books.
Here, are we still recording?
Yeah,
Did you
yes.
stop recording?
No. I have something to talk about after we're recording. I didn't want to get it. In
oh
the
my god, guys! I came to the Comic-Con site to go to the exhibitor part, look up my number, and all I can see is membership availability. 4 day sold out. Thursday sold out. Friday sold out. Saturday sold out. Sunday almost sold out. It's gonna be huge.
Yep,
that's good news, right? Woo! Hooray! Right?
Know. It's Hooray. Almost good. Hey,
can I
also say something that's going to sound completely pretentious, but I know that at least one person here will agree with me. Is nobody here in the podcast is nominated for an Eisner this year, right?
Nope.
Thank
no. That's
God.
Right.
Oh, I am. I am, actually. I am.
Thank God.
Well, what's wrong with it?
It's a. I mean, listen, Brad. Tell me how you feel about this. Was that evening not a grueling experience for you?
It was a lot of fun, and it was grueling all at the same time, because it was fun just to be there and to have that possibility dangling in front of me. But at the same time, I was kind of realistic about my chances of winning, and I knew that I was going to kind of leave feeling a little bit disappointed.
But yeah, I mean, exactly. But it I mean, it's such a big deal, and it eats. I don't know, man. Maybe it's just because I have so much anxiety in my normal life. But I mean, it almost destroyed me both times.
Really? Wow.
Seriously, it's – I mean, I was – I mean, the first year I was terrified I was going to lose, and the second year I was terrified I was going to win. And the worst-case scenario happened both years. But the first year I was like I thought I'd be devastated if I lost. And I did lose. I didn't win, and I was devastated. And the second year was the year that – I didn't nominate myself. Everyone was pissed I was nominated. And I asked the people, why was I nominated? I'm not even supposed to be eligible for this category. And they're like, oh, well, we felt that you should be, so don't worry about it. And then I won. And I was like, oh, God, please kill me.
Hey, Scott, I wanted to ask you actually a question about that. When the year that you won, it was for web comics, right?
It was for digital comics, yeah.
For digital comics. Was it – because now I notice that digital comics have to be long form. Like, it has to tell a story arc.
No, it's always been that way. That's was the thing. Was – okay, the year I was nominated for an Eisner and lost was the best year I was nominated for an Eisner, because I was nominated for Best Writer Humor. My publisher submitted my work to the Eisner Committee. And it was for a category in comics that I was really excited about. And I lost to Kyle Baker, and Kyle Baker did some great work on Plastic Man that year, and it was an honor. Really, it was a huge honor to be nominated. And the second year, I was nominated for Digital Comic in a category where you have to nominate yourself. There's no publisher. My Image can't nominate me for Digital Comic. I have to nominate my own work, which I didn't. In a category that excludes comic strips. It has to be long form, which I'm not. But they nominated me anyway. They just decided that year to just ignore the category requirements and nominate me.
Huh.
They felt that if you take both my they felt that if you take both my strips and put them together, it's a comic page. So what does it matter? Eight panels is eight panels. So who cares?
Right, right, right.
But then the next year, it still has to be long form. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, not to get up on my soapbox and make a political point out of it, but I think it's actually a huge point of contention and ridiculousness that in a medium where the truly biggest titles that bring in millions and millions of page views a month, if not a week, are all short form comics, that the web comic and digital comics award on the Eisners only goes to long form.
It's a horrible decision, and that's another thing that concerned me, was because I know that a couple people that were involved in setting up that category with the Eisner Committee had consulted with me on it, and I said, well, is it okay for me to consult with you if I might be eligible for it? And they said, oh, well, you won't be. It's long form only, so it's okay for you to talk to us about it. And I said, well, I guess my first comment is, why long form only? I think that's a horrible idea. And the response was, look, they're considering a category for digital comics. Let's take baby steps. Let's get our category first, and then we'll, you know, then we'll work on making them understand what it's all about.
Right, right.
Boy, I so don't agree with that.
I know.
Now they've started a premise. You know what I mean? Now they've got to work even twice as hard to fight what they've established.
Well, I mean, I guess not, right? Because Steve Purcell can win for web comics that were technically ads for a video game. So, I mean,
did he ever win for anything else that he did?
Who? Or no? An Eisner?
Yeah. Was he even nominated?
I don't know. I can't imagine that Sam and Max hasn't won an Eisner or a Harvey or something along the years. Yeah.
It's almost like I want to believe that he hadn't won anything, and they were like, you know what, we need to.
Oh, as the pity award. Yeah, yeah, yeah. like the late stage Academy Award towards the end of something.
Either that, or they were so enamored of the mouse over to read what the characters are saying thing that
it's truly something that can't be in print. It is of the web.
I've stared at it for hours until
well,
I move
do
my
I do?
Mouse.
Do I leave this whole thing in or do I cut it out?
I'll leave the part about the Eisner in. I don't know.
What do you mean? Even the part where I'm going like, oh, I hated it.
Oh, yeah, it's, I don't know. I'll leave it up to you. But hey, what was I going to say? So I found our two show times for the talk. Should I mention that?
Yeah, because also I'm going to be – let's mention the booth numbers again because I found my booth number. So I'm at 1437.
And we are at the Image booth, which I believe is at 2729 for Image Comics. So see both of us there. And then we have two talks that we'll be giving both on the Friday, July 25th. From 3 to 4 o'clock, we'll be doing an Introduction to Webcomics talk with our friend Phil Folio of Girl Genius, and that is in room 3. And I have bad news for you guys. We're up against Sci-Fi Ghost Hunters, also from the 3 to 4 o'clock hour. Not good. That is a well-produced show. I think we're in trouble there.
What are we going to do?
You know what? I mean, we're going up against Cryptozoology. Mm.
That's always a bear.
We also got a 6 to 7 o'clock talk, so you get the twofer. Man, try not to cover the same ground in one day, right? We have 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, we have a How to Make Webcomics Live with the four authors of Image Web – what does it say? Image Comics' breakout book. Brad, did you write this?
I wrote this. You don't do my stuff justice. The four authors
Let me read it in true Brad voice. All right, this is How to Make Webcomics Live. The four authors of Image Comics' breakout book, How to Make Webcomics, present a live version of the Absolute People Podcast. Anyway, so that's in room 8, and we are up against the Simpsons Collectors Group from 6 to 7. Boy, that's
for crying out loud.
Look out.
I'm yellow with envy. Oh, delicious. And that's it for the information I have.
Well, I'm excited about those.
I'm excited to do some talks.
I'm feeling that.
I have some fun news for you guys. My wife is driving down to catch both those talks. So
that will be awesome.
So that will be fun. My wife never ventures down to San Diego Comic-Con anymore because
she did used to come.
She did, and she found it this was her impression of San Diego Comic-Con when she would walk around. Oh, pretty lady with the dress and the shoes. Oy, with the flowing hair, Tressa Mayad. That was her impression of San Diego Comic-Con, so she doesn't come back much.
But that's why I go.
So in the middle of Chris Straub, like, oh, hey, can I introduce you to Star Slip? Hey, pretty lady, oy, with the Tressa Mayhem.
Anyway, where was I?
I don't know.
Sci-fi fun for all the family.
Very nice. Precisely. So that was it for me. What are we wrapping it up, gents?
That's it. That's a wrap. Webcomics Weekly. Come on.
Wrap it already, jeez.
Jeez.
Put this horse to bed.
How long have we been talking?
Almost 2
We're
hours.
On hour 6 of our marathon
run. I know. I've got to edit this.
I came in late, and I'm feeling it. God.
You know, Scott, if you want to edit my part, have we stopped recording now?
No, but we're going to. Oh, gosh. All right, everyone stop recording in 3, 2, 1.
Guys, I didn't stop yet. Should I stop?